BC Sports Pro Basketball Talk Podcast. Brett Polakoff here with Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt?
Oh, not much. After a week of being sick, I'm feeling better and ready to do a podcast and then get into the weekend of actually watching games while not feeling ill the whole time.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan. let's get right into it here. We got the Thursday night TNT games that we always love to talk about on these Friday morning editions. First up, we had the Thunder hosting the Memphis Grizzlies. Really wasn't much of a game. Thunder rolled over them 106-89. Really was a tale of the two offenses. Memphis couldn't get anything going, shot just 34.7% from the field, while OKC shot better than 55% from the field. That was pretty much it. It was really not ever in jeopardy. How much of Memphis, you know, it's kind of funny. They had the big trade for Rudy Gay earlier this week with the Raptors. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but how much of that Memphis offense was due to Rudy Gay being gone, and how much of that is just kind of who Memphis is?
Yeah, the problem is, and I think this really dovetails into a lot of the criticism people have had of the Rudy Gay trade, their offense stinks when Rudy Gay is there.
Right.
Their offense is 23rd in the NBA in points per possession with Rudy Gay. So I'm not one of those people who thinks this is a terrible trade, because I think with Tayshaun Prince, I think Ed Davis is a really nice pickup that much better off the bench than some of the guys they've had is a big – I don't hate this trade for them. I kind of like it. I think they save a lot of money. But their offense isn't going to be great. And anybody, any analyst you hear out there now who comes on and says, the Memphis offense is terrible since they traded Rudy Gay, did not watch them play with Rudy Gay, because it's not been good all season. What happened is now they trade Gay. They don't get Tayshaun Prince back. None of their subs are in yet. So they're going with a 9-man rotation. And they're going up against Oklahoma City team that has had about 4 or 5 days off in a row, had a couple practices, they're rested, they're sharp, and they hit their first 9 shots in a row coming out of the gate. And Memphis is a good defensive team. This was just a perfect storm of bad coming together for Memphis, where they're on the road, they're tired, they've just traded their, you know, one of the key players on their team, and they run into a very hot and much better Oklahoma City team, and it just was an ugly, you know, steamrolling.
Yeah, defensively, Memphis is one of the better teams in the league, you know, especially at home. Unfortunately, they were on the road for this one, and, you know, not a lot of teams are going to be able to stop Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook anyway. You let them get off to that hot of a start, you're pretty much done. You're not going to be able to come back on this Thunder team. You know, back to that Rudy Gay trade, a lot of people, you know, obviously it was made for financial reasons, right? I mean, they had to get that contract off the books. But you look at what they got back in return, you know, Tayshaun Prince can still play. He's been, you know, kind of languishing away in Detroit all these years while they've been trying to go through a rebuild. But he's the guy that can still play. You know, he can give you a lot of different things, especially help out defensively. And Ed Davis is a nice piece. I mean, he's on a very, very small contract. And, you know, again, he's buried away in Toronto. So unless you're a league pass junkie or you do this for a living like we do, you're not seeing a lot of Ed Davis. But that guy's a hustle player. He can get a lot of rebounds, and he's solid inside. So I think, you know, while it was made for financial reasons, and, you know, it'll remain to be seen how these pieces fit, I actually think they got a couple nice pieces, and they might actually be improved before the season's over.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think they'd take a step back. I don't know that they're going to take a huge step forward. You're spot on about Davis. Look, they liked Ed Davis in Toronto. When Andrea Bargnani went down, Davis is the guy who stepped into the starting role, and by the end of it had Coach Casey saying, look, he's our starter. When Bargnani comes back, Bargnani's coming off the bench. Ed Davis has earned the starting role, took it away from a former number one overall pick, and who's getting big bucks. So
right.
I think that speaks to how well he's playing. They're going to love him. I mean, look, basically he's going to get the old Maurice Spates minutes, the guy they traded in, you know, the true salary dump trade a week ago.
Yeah.
That is a huge upgrade for them. So I think they're about the same. Maybe, like you said, maybe they get a little better by the time they figure this whole thing out. I think their problem is there seems to be this sense around people and some of the comments out there that they broke up a team that really had a chance at a championship. And I think they had 4 or 5% chance at best, because they're not better than Oklahoma City, even when they're playing well. They're not better than the Clippers. I'm not sure they're better than the Spurs. They're not better than the Heat. So many things had to go perfectly right for them to get to the finals and have a shot at winning it, that I don't think they took some sort of huge step back, and they saved a ton of money.
Yeah, the championship talk is a little crazy. I mean, there aren't a lot of teams that have a legitimate shot. You mentioned all of them, I think, you know, right then. You know, I don't see Memphis having enough offense, you know, to win a championship, you know, or even play deep into the postseason. Their defense is not at the level of elite defense that it needs to be to win a championship without any offense. And, you know, they have guys that can score inside and down low, but they don't have a lot of guys that can create their own shot. That was sort of the criticism of the Rudy Gay trade. It's like, look, sure, well, at least Rudy can create his own shot. Now, not so sure. And, you know, Mike Conley's improved at the guard spot, but, you know, he's still not going to get you 15 assists per game and get guys a ton of wide open looks. They're a bruising team offensively. They score a lot inside. Marc Gasol has been just, you know, awesome. You know, Zach Randolph has most of the numbers this season, but you get the ball to Gasol, he scores inside. So, but yeah, just overall offensively, I just wasn't seeing it with Memphis. But, you know, again, you know, we'll see how these new pieces fit and, you know, how they improve as the season progresses.
I think they're a tough out in the playoffs simply because of how they play is more of a playoff style where they can pound you inside and slow it down. But I'm with you. I don't think they advance that deep. I mean, they're second. They could get to the second round, but I don't think they go any farther than that. And you talk about the rest of that trade. Rudy Gay now goes to Toronto. That's, you know, look, it's weird to say this when the team gets the best player in the trade because Toronto got the best player in this trade. And I don't get it. Like, I don't see where they're going or what they're doing or how this is going to work for them. Because they've already got DeMar DeRozan. They're going to have to go to Kyle Lowry now. So they ship out Jose Calderon. So Kyle Lowry, an aggressive point guard who wants the ball in his hands. And now they've got Rudy Gay and DeMar DeRozan. They've got a lot of athletes, but I, for the life of me, cannot figure out what kind of team they are building up there. They might be a little better starting five than they had before, but I don't see how they really get better. I don't see what the master plan is.
No, I would agree with that. It seems more like a little bit of fantasy basketball up there where they're acquiring guys that, you know, look good on the court and can put up some numbers. But, yeah, it's tough to see how those pieces are going to fit long-term in Toronto.
Yeah, and I should add, you know, there may be future moves, but I've talked to a lot of people in Toronto. They're done with Brian Colangelo, both the fan base and I just get a sense that it was time to move on. You don't let Brian Colangelo make this trade and take on all this salary and shake up the roster like this to dump it off on somebody else. It's almost a tacit endorsement of him as getting the next contract, and that's what would really scare me if I'm a Raptors fan.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll definitely be something to watch in Toronto. And over on the Oklahoma City side, you know, not a lot to talk about in terms of pure basketball for the Thunder. You know, they played well, were able to pull away late, after Memphis closed the gap a little bit. But we had a little bit of drama involving Russell Westbrook. We had a play where Russell Westbrook was backing down his defender, whistled for a 5-second call, seemed very upset with Thabo Sefolosha for not making the proper cut. Over on the bench was seen with assistant coach Maurice Cheeks, was very upset, very heated, ended up pounding a chair, then heading to the locker room, came back out later, sat on the bench, pouting, it looked like, you know, still looked very unhappy, towel over his head. What's your take on Westbrook and what happened with that situation?
I just think he's a competitive guy. He was frustrated with whatever the situation was where he expected a different cut or somebody not to cut. I don't know, you know, what the exact play was. He wasn't talking after the game about it. He was, you know, trying to play it down a little bit and seeming pretty frustrated about being asked by it. And I don't know what was going on. My thought was, you're up 15 at the time.
Yeah.
There are times to get frustrated about things. This was really not the game or the time, but he snapped. And I think, you know, I get competitive players having their moments and just snapping it and kind of losing it for a second. It over this seemed a weird choice.
Yeah, I would agree, except that, you know, it's fair to say that we don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes in Oklahoma City. You know, Westbrook could have had problems with Sefolosha in the past of not executing the offense, you know, as he should, maybe just not running plays, maybe not listening. If you are into lip reading and you watch Westbrook on the bench, it looked like he said something to the effect of every, you know, expletive time, you know, so it could be over and over again and just kind of got to him. And, you know, look, I would always rather have a passionate guy like Westbrook on my team than somebody that doesn't care. You know, you know, I said this last night, but, you know, we all care so much about these games. We're huge fans. We invest a lot of time and energy into rooting for these players. To be honest, most of these players don't care nearly as much about these games or the outcomes as the fans do. So it's nice when you have a guy like Westbrook who's passionate and is really into it. And look, the Thunder, they're looking at a championship this season. That's their goal. They want to make another run to the finals. they have the talent, they have the ability to get there if everything falls into place. And maybe that's what is, you know, ticking Westbrook off. Maybe he's looking long term and being like, look, we're almost halfway through the season now. This guy still isn't making the proper reads or the proper cuts, and I'm getting sick of it.
Yeah. And look, the regular season, when you're a truly elite team, when you are Miami or Oklahoma City or a team truly contending for a title, and you're kind of a playoff lock at that point, the regular season is about building good habits, because when you get pressured in the playoffs, when you know it's a time crunch late in the game where the defensive pressure is up and you start acting on instinct, you have to have built up good habits you learned over the course of the regular season. If you build up a bunch of bad habits, you know, the whole flip the switch thing, that can come back to bite you, because your instinct will be wrong and you will pay a price for it. So I like that he's fighting to get these little things right. It just, the reaction seemed out of whack at the moment.
Yeah, and then, you know, unfortunately it leaves his coaches and teammates trying to explain, you know, afterwards what happened. Like, hey, what's up with Westbrook? Is everything okay? You know, Scott Brooks downplayed it afterwards. They televised an interview, part of Westbrook's postgame presser in the locker room. Craig Sager was grilling him pretty good. Was pretty uncomfortable to watch. You know, you and I have both been in locker rooms plenty, and it's no fun when that's going on. You know, Sager was pretty persistent, and it was clear Westbrook, you know, had no desire to talk about it. What's your take on that situation? Like, should Westbrook be forced to, you know, explain himself to the media, or look, you know, it's an internal issue, and if he wants to downplay it, that's just fine.
I think you've got to expect that. I mean, all of these things generally get downplayed short of, you know, actual fisticuffs on the bench. Or
yeah.
So, I mean, that's the standard operating procedures for teams. Oh, it's not that big a deal. And frankly, it's not that big a deal most of the time. I mean, look, we're guys. This isn't, you know, the men are better, I think, about letting things go and not carrying grudges, especially on a team if you're succeeding. You know, you can be frustrated with the guy and snap at him and have these moments and then go have a beer with him afterwards and not really bring it with you. And I think that that's kind of one of these situations. He's frustrated, but I don't think this really changes anything grand with Oklahoma City.
No, I would agree. And, you know, I'm of the opinion he doesn't really owe the media anything. I mean, it's nice, you know, as we're in the locker room trying to get those quotes and for make our stories interesting for our readers. The reality is he doesn't owe us anything, you know, so... you know, it's fair for Sager to ask those questions and to grill him like that, but, you know, I think Westbrook needs to be a little bit more or a little bit less sensitive in that situation. He, like you said, he has to expect those questions are coming and just be ready to be like, yeah, you know what, I'm not talking about it, and just kind of brush it off like that. But he's young. You know, we forget these guys are in their early 20s. You know, they're going to grow. There's plenty of time for them to be a little bit more media savvy. And I think Westbrook will, you know, eventually evolve into that guy.
Yeah, exactly. He's 24. Same with Kevin Durant. We keep forgetting that sometimes, and there's moments like this you forget that. And the other thing you forget is that they're 24. If the Thunder are going to be really good for a really long time.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and then the second game of the doubleheader, we had the Warriors hosting the Mavericks. A little bit of a luster taken off that one as Stephen Curry missed the game with a sprained ankle. And Dirk Nowitzki also sat out with a hip injury. Mavericks were without Chris Kaman as well due to concussion symptoms he's still suffering from. Some wild swings in that game. Seemed like Golden State was really trying to give that game away. They had a couple big leads that they let Dallas sort of crawl their way back into. Teams had matching 13-0 runs in the fourth quarter. Warriors started it off with the 13-0 run, and then Dallas came right back with one. Pretty close down the stretch there. The key play ended up being Mavericks down one. Ball went into Brandon Wright on the low block. And Andrew Bogut with some nice fundamentally sound defense there. Didn't leave his feet, kept his arms straight up. Got mostly ball as Wright went up for the shot. There was a little contact there. I think, and I thought in real time, that the refs made the right call. I think it was a good no call in that situation. You know, there wasn't egregious contact. It was mostly ball. Refs didn't call the foul. Jarrett Jack ends up with the rebound, hits the free throws, game over in the Warriors' favor. Mark Cuban, predictably unhappy with the lack of the foul call afterwards. Here's what he said via Twitter, quote unquote. He said, "Can't wait to see what the NBA says about this no call with 2 seconds left." So that's probably a very carefully crafted response from Cuban is not necessarily calling out the officials. He's just saying, hey, I'd like to see what the NBA says about it. So be interesting to see if the league sees it differently and wants to levy a fine. But what did you think on that final play there? Did you think Mavericks were right to be upset about that?
Yeah, from the angle I saw, I mean, the television angle we saw, which was, you know, Brandon kind of turning and trying to go up. You're right. Bogut doesn't leave his feet. He's pretty straight up and down. Bogut's a really good defensive player in the post. And I think he played it fundamentally correct, and it didn't look like a foul in real time. It doesn't show that way to me. You know, maybe with different camera angles or where Carlisle was standing, it looked different. You know, I think what's frustrating Dallas is, you know, they've lost two close games in a row now. I mean, they lost a really close, really exciting one up in Portland the other night with, you know, Dirk Nowitzki hitting a key late shot, but, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge hit his first three of the season to tie it and then won it with a turnaround jumper. And at the end of that, O.J. Mayo got called for a charge that the league the next day said that was a bad call.
Yeah.
A block. He should have gotten two free throws with, I think it was 2.2 seconds left. Now they get another call that doesn't go their way at the end of the game, and they're frustrated. And that's understandable. That was a bad call. The league admitted it. This one's kind of borderline, but, I'll read you the quote. Carlisle, after the game last night, was Brandon Wright got hit on the arm, and it's obvious it's two nights in a row, and it's very tough to take. You know, I'm disappointed. I'm concerned. I'm concerned about what's happening at the end of games with officials. I can only be honest. So Cuban, I think you're right, is on the borderline with getting fined. Rick Carlisle can pull out his checkbook.
Yeah,
it's coming. You know, the $25,000 fine for him is coming down. But he's frustrated. They were fighting to make a playoff run, you know, to try to get back in this. They like the Lakers, thought maybe they could make a push at the end of the season and catch up to these teams. And now they lose two. These are the kind of close games they've got to win if you're going to make a playoff run, and they're losing them.
Yeah, I think you hit it exactly. It's the fact that it's two games in a row is probably what's grating on Cuban and Rick Carlisle there. I mean, when you're in those games, I mean, look, you need every advantage you can get, and for the league to admit it made a mistake. You know, we've seen that in the past from the league. They'll admit, they'll send out a release saying, "Hey, the officials got this play wrong." I'm not sure why they do that, because, you know, to me that only infuriates the team even more. It's like, we were right. You're not going to do anything about it. We still have to take the loss in the loss column. I guess it's good to have some accountability at the league level. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes, if referees are fined or sanctioned or anything like that. But it seems to just anger the teams even more. And then when you have it two nights in a row like this, it is tough to deal with. You know, on the flip side, you know, most coaches will tell you, well, we shouldn't be in that position. If we want to win the game, we need to not leave it up to the officials. We need to make sure that, you know, we're up by a comfortable enough margin to where the referees aren't a factor. Problem is, when you're a team like Dallas and you're struggling and you're borderline and you're missing your best player, you know, you're going to be in tight games. And so you really just it's definitely tough for them to swallow. I can see that.
Yeah, look, I remember my coach is in my youth, like, losing it. We lost a close game and we're trying to blame the refs. And he just, after shattering a clipboard on the wall and using some expletives, suggested we shouldn't have played like fertilizer in the second quarter, and it wouldn't have been it wouldn't have been close at the end. And there's something to that. I mean, you leave a close game, if a game's close, and luck plays a factor. You know, lucky bounces off rims, lucky plays, and the referees are kind of part of that on borderline block charge calls or close. You know, close, did he get fouled or not calls. You can't bank on getting those at the end of the game, and Dallas came out on the short end a couple times in a row, but it's you know, that it's frustrating. That's a team that's been in the playoffs, a franchise that's been in the playoffs 12 straight years, and it looks like that streak's coming to an end. And as much as Cuban set this up to rebuild, I don't think he thought this would be the result this year.
Yeah, definitely tough to take in Dallas. We'll keep an eye out on fines for Carlisle and possibly Cuban after that one. All right, well, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit of Boston Celtics. Unfortunately, Rajon Rondo went out for the season with a torn ACL. News was announced on Sunday. It was a bit of a surprise to everybody because he played like 45 minutes in the game in Atlanta, you know, just two nights before. He was a late scratch from that game. You know, the news was surprising, you know, somewhat devastating to a team that, you know, many thought were going to try to, you know, use its veteran leadership to make one more run. You know, defensively, when they're all engaged, the Celtics were a very tough team to deal with. Always play with a lot of heart and intensity. And, you know, in a playoff series, who knows what could happen. But now without Rondo, you know, they're forced to kind of look at things bigger picture and see if, you know, maybe they want to start trading some of those key pieces. What are your thoughts on the Celtics? What do they do? Do they make a move before the deadline? And what's the likelihood of one of the big names in Boston leaving town, you know, most notably Paul Pierce?
Yeah, I think Pierce is the guy, if somebody goes by the deadline, would be it. But I can't see that happening, in part because he's just such the talisman of that team. He's been an entire career Celtic. He is the best-known Celtic since the Bird era ended. He's, what, I think, a 10-time All-Star, finals not only champion but finals MVP. Just kind of one of those Celtic icons, and I hate the idea, really, of them trading him. But I think that they've reached the point with this group where they've watched this season play out. I mean, is Danny Ainge really going to look at this roster, look at how things have played out this season, and say, hey, if I bring pretty much this exact group back together next year, we can actually make a run and challenge the Heat and the other elite teams in the league? I don't see how he can think that. I think he's got to be thinking about really, you know, making changes. And I don't like to say the idea of blowing it up, like just start trading everybody for everything. I think you've got to be more strategic. I think it's going to be, if he makes moves, I think you're more likely to see it this summer, unless somebody comes through with a blistering offer. And that's essentially what he said. You know, his quote that we ran today at PBT was, I would like Pierce to retire as Celtic, but if somebody hits me up with an offer, then I'm going to go talk to him. And I think that that's the professional thing to do. But my guess is all this is going to come down this summer. There's also a really interesting quote that one of our Comcast and NBC partner friends, Rick Bucher, had, talking to a couple of GMs who said, I wouldn't give up much for Kevin Garnett because I'm not sure how much longer he wants to play. You know, he's got a couple years left on his deal, but they're afraid to give up assets for a guy they think could just say in a year or two go, you know, I'm done. Like, especially if he were out of Boston and not in a title, and not in a place where he could contend for a title, that he would just walk right now rather than keep playing. He wants to win another ring. If that's not happening somewhere, is he going to really fight through it? And because of that, he doesn't carry much trade value. You know, the championship teams aren't going to give up much to get him because they don't need to. You know, they're already there. And the teams that would give up something for him, he doesn't want to play for. So it's not an easy spot for Danny Ainge, but I think he's got to think about turning the page on this franchise right now.
Yeah, you mentioned Garnett. He's one of, I think, maybe like four players in the league that has a no-trade clause as well. So he's not going anywhere, I don't think. And I don't think you can, if you're another team, just for all the reasons you said, offer up any assets. You know, first of all, he's going to have to waive that no-trade clause. And then second of all, he could just be done after this season. And then it's tough to see where you might be at that point. And then regarding Paul Pierce, I think there would have to be a lot of assets offered at the deadline for Danny Ainge to get rid of him mid-season. There would have to be things that would legitimately and sort of unquestionably improve this team in the future. You'd have to have young athletic guys that could either be, you know, solid rotation guys off the bench or, you know, be ready to step into a starting role. If you're thinking full-blown rebuild, you're going to need draft picks from a bad team. And then, like, are you going to trade? Is Paul Pierce going to want to play for some, you know, is Paul Pierce going to want to play in Charlotte? I don't think so. You know, not to finish out his career. So I would agree with you. I think we're looking at the summertime for the Celtics to start making some long-term changes to this roster. But, you know, who knows if a borderline team comes through with some interesting packages, you know, Ainge will definitely have to look at that.
Yeah. And the other thing Ainge has got to look at is how severe is Rondo's ACL injury? If this is, you know, it's, he's talking about maybe having him back by the start of next season and healthy. This isn't a Derrick Rose ACL, MCL massive problem. If it's something where he can bring this entire group back next year, might he? I mean, my gut would say you would look at this and say it's not going to work. But he did it this year, and I'm not convinced that he wouldn't try it one more time. That if, you know, they certainly, the breaks haven't gone their way this year, and he'd be willing to maybe give that one more run. I still think they're going to make moves this summer and start their changes, but, you know, and start transitioning to the next phase, which is going to be more of a Rondo-based team. But it wouldn't shock me if he made one more run because I didn't think he'd do it this year.
Yeah, definitely something to keep an eye out there in Boston. All right, then. And finally, let's look at the Lakers situation as we do every week because it's, you know, fascinating drama as always. Most recent issue surrounding the team is Dwight Howard and the shoulder injury. Adrian Wojnarowski reported Friday morning Dwight's expected to miss at least Friday night's game at Minnesota with the shoulder injury. Dwight was here in Phoenix with the Lakers losing to the Suns on Wednesday night. He was in a lot of pain in the locker room afterwards. It's no surprise at all that he's going to sit at least one game. Everybody seemed to be saying the same thing, which is this is a type of injury. It's not like a full-blown torn labrum that requires immediate surgery. It's a type of injury that will hurt, and then in a day or two or three, the pain will subside, and then Dwight's able to play through it again. Problem is, anytime he gets hit, like he got hit on that play in Phoenix, it's very likely to be injured again, and for him to feel that sting. It's guys swiping downward on your arm as you're going up for a shot. That's going to affect the shoulder. So the question becomes, should Dwight sit for an extended period, try to get it some rest, get it some strength so that maybe, just a run-of-the-mill foul doesn't knock him out for the game? Or does he have to try to play through it because of the Lakers' dire situation so far this season?
Can Dwight Howard get more strength in his shoulders?
Yeah, I don't know. They're pretty big.
Honestly, I don't think more upper body strength is really Dwight Howard's
problem. That's a good point.
That said, it's a tough spot because, to me, if the Lakers really – if he's out three or four games, if this road trip goes badly, if it's pretty clear they're not going to make the playoffs, he's talked about not wanting to go through another summer of rehab. Clearly, he doesn't want to go through another summer of rehab and come off surgery while he's trying to get a max contract, as a free agent.
Yeah.
That said, that might be the best long-term thing for him. I mean, it's 6 months, but if you get that done in March, you're still ready to go. You missed the rest of the season, but you're ready to go next fall, healthy and 100%. The problem he's at is, you're right, every time, he's been aggravated it twice. Once when he ran into a screen and his shoulder kind of ran into Rudy Gay, and he was in pain, and he missed the rest of that game, but he didn't miss more time. And then, what happened in Phoenix, where he got fouled trying to go up with his arms, and it creates strain on the shoulder. It's Dwight Howard. Every time he goes up, they're going to hack his arms because he can't make free throws.
Exactly.
He's going to get hacked more than anybody else. So it's going to be painful for him every time he's in a game. And at some point, I think they've got to rest him and rehab him. The problem is their defense. I mean, that you were at that game. Once he left, Michael Beasley pretty much had an open interstate highway to the paint.
Yeah.
And the game changed and the Lakers lost. And their defense can't be like that when he sits. He had taken charge of the defense pretty well for a few games. Their defense had been better. And as soon as he sat, their defense just fell apart again. Their transition defense, everything. And that's what's killed them all year long, really, anyway. Their defense has just been awful.
Well, and here's the issue for the Lakers. So as of right now, we're 3 weeks from the trade deadline. They're on this road trip right now. The Lakers are 6 games below 500, but they're still just 4 games out of the playoff picture. They only have Portland and Houston ahead of them, and then Utah 1 game, above those teams. On this road trip, tonight they're in Minnesota, then they got Detroit, Brooklyn, Boston, Charlotte, and Miami. Before coming home to play the Suns and the Clippers before the All-Star break.
There's a lot of winnable games on this road trip.
Yeah. But Brooklyn's going to be tough. Boston always is tough. Their style is tough. And then Miami, come on. Especially if Dwight Howard's not there, it's going to be, a little bit too much to ask. Clippers at the end, we'll have to see if Chris Paul is back by then and all that type of stuff. But at what point, it's getting kind of tenuous for the Lakers right now, because at what point do they decide, how far out of the playoffs basically do they need to fall before deciding, okay, it's not happening this season and we got to look at some other options?
Yeah, I'm not sure where that line is. They're getting really close to it. But like you said, normally I'd say they might have been past that point, but the bottom of the West has actually been a little softer than you'd expect.
Yeah.
I keep expecting, I think Houston can play a little better. Portland's in there and they've been up and down and, I keep expecting little runs there, but when they're floating close to 500, it keeps the Lakers' hopes alive, because you look at where they are, like you said, 4 games back, and you can say, well, if they just get on a run, if they just have one 10-game win streak, suddenly they're there, or 7-game win streak or whatever. Suddenly they're kind of right back in the mix and fighting for it. Are they really going to be able to do that? Are they really going to be able to do that with Dwight Howard? I got a feeling that they're going to finally put together their 7 or 10 game win streak, but it's going to be in March and it's going to be too late.
Yeah, and then obviously that's going to be past the trade deadline. And
yeah. And, then, and I'm not sure, honestly, I'm not sure what the moves are. I think ultimately, I don't know that they're going to move Pau Gasol before the deadline. And it kind of comes back to what we were saying with Pierce. I'm not sure that somebody's going to give them all these assets for a 32-year-old guy who's going to make $19.3 million next year and miss games with bad knees. As skilled as Pau Gasol is, I don't think his trade value is at its peak right now. But I think if they're going to go with D'Antoni, if they're really going to start Earl Clark, and Clark's playing well, I don't want to knock it. But, I mean, if that's the direction they're going, then they should save some money, trade Gasol, and get some assets. The other part of it is, remember, the Lakers don't want to take on any salary past 2014.
Right.
They've only got Steve Nash on the books. They'd like to add Dwight Howard for that year. I still think they want to re-sign him. After that, they don't want to take on any long-term salary, which makes – trading a $19.3 million player really difficult because nobody wants to give you back, oh, hey, here's our expiring for that.
Yeah. No one's looking to help the Lakers out, that's for sure. But the biggest piece of all of that is Dwight Howard because, once Kobe retires, the plan was, hey, we want Dwight long-term to be sort of the new face of the franchise. We need star power in Los Angeles. We can't go through a full-fledged rebuild here with no big-name players. It's going to be interesting to see whether Dwight feels the same way once the season comes to a close. All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. Make sure to leave us some comments. Let us know how we're doing. And Kurt, look forward to speaking with you next time.
I'll talk to you then.